And now I'd like you to help me welcome our speaker tonight. Mm-hmm. Speaker is Mark.
Hi there, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, so up until like a couple hours ago, I was kind of under the impression that I was going to come here and listen to somebody speak. But unbeknownst to me, I'm speaking tonight. So a few hours ago, I didn't realize it was going to be like this, but Sarah called me at like 4 o'clock, and I guess I don't know exactly what happened with the speaker, but they were not able to get here tonight. So I kind of usually preface when I speak with a couple things. Public speaking is not my thing. Like, I have a lot of self-centered fear. I prefer, like, I do a lot better one-on-one or, like, in, like, a smaller, intimate setting. I took a public speaking class a couple semesters ago, and in the textbook, they said that, like, there's, like, a large percentage of people that would rather be burned alive than have to speak in public. And it's, like, I can relate to that, you know? It's, like, because I'm so concerned with, like, you're not going to love me, or, like, you're not going to like me, or, you know, whatever you may or may not be thinking about me, I'm trying to think about what that, you know, just all that stuff. So, you know, I definitely, like, when Sarah asked me to speak, like, in between, you know, in that four-hour window, from 4 to 8, like, I tried to not think about what I was going to say, because, my ego wants me to say this, like, deep, profound shit, and have everybody really kind of be, you know, enthralled and impressed and all that. So, like, I really, you know, when I ask God to, like, come in and, like, and you just use me, because that's, like, what I've been taught. So, okay, so I guess I'm supposed to tell you, like, in a general way what I was like and what happened and what I'm like now. I usually preface when I'm speaking with, like, a whole lot of other stuff. I have a home group. My home group is First Speakers Group, which is this group. I have a sobriety date. My sobriety date is February 7th, 2010. And I have a sponsor, and he has a sponsor, and, like, I attempt to sponsor other women. So that, I usually kind of just, like, say that. And I don't know, I think that, like, I always wonder kind of, like, why people say that, and I think it's just to kind of demonstrate that, like, I might really be trying to, like, if I'm doing all those things, like, I might actually be living on all three sides of the triangle, you know? So anyway, that's usually what I start with. So, you know, I grew up, like, around this area. I actually grew up, like, very close to here, in Bucks County. And, you know, I remember being, like, a little girl. Like, I remember being really young and, like, having this, like, magical feeling. Like, everything was, like, really beautiful and, like, everything was okay. And the world was just, like, you know, good. And I think that, like, I can remember starting elementary school and that leaving. Like, I remember that feeling not being there very much, like, after I started, you know, getting a little bit older, and in place of that was, like, a lot of fear and a lot of, like, feeling like there's all of you, and, like, everyone can sort of really easily, like, interact, and everybody in school has, like, a best friend, and then there's me, like, really separate, you know, and, like, different, and it seems like everyone just sort of knew how to do this life stuff. And I didn't, you know? And only until, like, I went through the steps and, like, started to apply these principles in my life, like, I still didn't know how to walk through this world. And, like, I didn't, you know? So I believe that, you know, step one is, like, I'm physically different and, like, I'm mentally different. And then I have this spiritual malady, like, this spiritual sickness, which I think was, like, beginning to manifest when I started experiencing all that fear and all that, you know, feeling different and stuff, like the spiritual malady, the disconnection from God and from you guys. So, you know, so I remember, you know, I think that was probably, like, kind of the beginning of, like, the malady. I don't think that alcoholism is, like, an environmentally induced thing. I think that I just sort of, I don't really know. I think that it was just, like, a hand of cards that I was dealt. So, you know, I grew up in, like, a very loving household, two parents, younger brother. Now, my parents are kind of like hippies, right? Like, they like to smoke a lot of pot and stuff. And, you know, so that was like a big part of, you know, when I was growing up, like, that was very, you know, that was very acceptable, and that's what I saw a lot and stuff. But, like, you know, when I got sober, if you would have asked me how my childhood was, like, I would have told you that my parents were a bunch of drug addicts that chose drugs over me, that made me this way, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And because of, like, doing some good inventory and making amends and stuff, like, really my perception is today, my parents would have done anything for me. Like, they loved me more than anything, you know, and that is not, my perception from when I got sober to now is completely different about my upbringing and my childhood and stuff, you know, which is, like, pretty amazing. So, you know, I had, like, a, you know, a good childhood, good upbringing. I remember, you know, it's funny, I usually say this when I speak, but, like, really, like, I feel like my first addiction was, like, boys, right? Because I could, like, you know, when I was, like, in middle school and stuff, and I was, like, a teenager, I could find, you know, run around with these boys, and it was, like, the same effect almost as drugs and alcohol, right? Like, it took me away, you know, it took me away from the way that I felt, you know, like, it made me feel beautiful, it made me feel valuable, and it was kind of, like, this really nice distraction. So, like, I, you know, I ran around and did that for a while, and then, so, the first time that I drank, I was, like, dating this guy, and he broke up with me, and I was, like, really upset, and he had this bottle of vodka stashed underneath my bed, and it was, like, this, it was, like, this $8 gallon jug of, like, Thomas Shotka vodka or something. You know, it was, like, really inexpensive, really cheap vodka. So, but I knew that, like, if I drank it, I knew that, like, because I was sad, right? And I knew that it would kind of, like, take, I knew that I would feel different. Like, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but I knew I would feel different if I drank it. So, like, I drank it, and, like, the first experience I had that night was that, like, I definitely drank alcoholically. I can remember bits and pieces of, like, the room is spinning, right? The room is spinning, and I'm putting my foot down off the, like, hanging my foot off the bed to put on the floor to, like, ground myself for the spinning. So, you know, I don't know. You know, I guess the book talks about, like, the phenomenon of craving, like, the physical allergy. When I ingest this stuff, like, I can't stop. Like, I don't stop until it tells me to stop. So, you know, I think that that was, like, my first experience with alcohol. So, you know, I don't know. I hear some people say that, like, once, you know, that first drink that they ever had, like, they did it as much as possible and, like, any, you know, all the time, as often as possible. And, like, that really wasn't my experience. Like, we just were doing kind of, like, this, like, what was seemingly a pretty normal, like, high school thing, you know? It's like you go to school and then, like, you drink and you smoke pot and stuff on the weekends. Like, honestly, in the beginning, when it was like that, like, we did have fun. Like, it was fun in the beginning, you know? I was not paying any consequences. I was not, you know, towards the end, it's like, my alcoholism had just cut everything out of my life. I mean, anything that was kind of getting in the way of it had to go. But, like, in the beginning, it was not like that, you know? It just progressed. So, you know, and we were kind of, we were like a stoner group in high school, you know, we were, I really did feel, like, I remember, you know, that disconnection that I felt in elementary, when I started going to elementary school and stuff. I can remember, like, getting messed up with these people and feeling, like, connected, you know, like, feeling, like, so, like, everything was okay, you know, everything was really good. And it, I think that, you know, drugs and alcohol were definitely effective for making me, you know, feel that sort of connection. Now, towards the end, it wasn't more, I couldn't get connected like that anymore. Towards the end, it was not working like that anymore. But initially, it was. So, you know, and like, see, I think because of the experiences that my parents have, see, they don't have the problem that I do. Like, they can smoke a little pot or they can drink a little bit, and then they're like, whoa, I got to go to work tomorrow. I can't do any more of this, you know? And I do it, and I'm like, okay, you know, I like that fire inside of me. But because of, like, their sort of, I don't know, loose rules or whatever, like, my house ended up kind of being the house where everyone was going, and like, the party house, you know? I mean, that's just, like, you know, I'm going to go, because my parents did always say, like, you do what you want, but if you're going to do it, you do it here so that you're safe, you know? So, you know, we would go over and on the weekends and stuff, you know, just run around like maniacs and do all that stuff. And, you know, at this point, like, maybe, I don't know, when I am 16, I'm getting high and drunk with my parents and stuff a little bit, and, you know, just sort of doing this recreational stuff. But I can remember, like, probably when I was, like, 16, I had this little, like, bus girl job, right? I was, like, did this little, like, you know, bus girl thing at a restaurant. And, like, all the money that I was getting on my paycheck, like, it would all be gone, like, real quick, you know, with alcohol and stuff. And I can remember, like, having this sort of moment where I'm thinking, like, I don't know if that's normal. Like, I don't know if everyone spends their entire paycheck on this stuff, you know. But I just had, like, a sort of a little glimpse of, like, maybe that, you know, abnormality or whatever. And I was absolutely not willing to consider that it might be an issue, or that it might be maybe I should look at this or whatever, because, you know, there just wasn't any consequences, and the relief that I was getting was good. So, you know, I think that I kind of went through high school like that, I graduated high school, and I can remember, you know, my parents were always really like, you gotta get an education, like, you gotta do well, you have to get an education, you have to go to college and, you know, do well in this world, and they believed that, you know, that was very important to go to school and stuff. So I graduate high school, and they're like, okay, like, where are you gonna go to college? And I'm like, I just went to school for, like, 12 years, you know? Like, I don't really need to do more. Isn't that a little excessive, you know? So I took, like, a couple semesters off, you know, and they were just, you know, I don't know. It's funny. It's like trying to... There's a lot of parts of my story that are just hazy, you know? It's like I just can't remember. I can piece together, you know, some of it. But, you know, so I took a couple semesters off, and then I started going to community college. You know, I did okay in that for a little while, like maybe a few semesters I did okay. I was able to get, like, you know, fairly decent grades. And then I transferred to a university, and, like, by the time I'm at the university, like, I am not showing up for classes in any sort of appropriate manner, you know? I mean, I would sit in these classes, and the professors would look at me, like, and the other kids in the class would look at me, like, it was, I'm sure, very obvious that I was not, you know, functioning very well, and I'd fall asleep in class, and then I'd go to the bathroom, all the, you know, it was just So I ended up failing out of college, you know, And I heard this speaker say a while ago that, like, it's almost, like, it really, this is my experience, he said, like, it was almost easier to, like, when you don't have to show up for any of that stuff anymore, when you don't have to, like, show up for work or show up for your family, like, really, when I was, like, towards the end, I'm in Florida, and I'm homeless, and I'm, like, sleeping in my car, that was almost easier, because I didn't have to, like, try to hold it together. Like, it sucked when I was trying to hold it together and show up for this stuff, and I was, like, incapable, you know? Like, I really related to that when I heard him say that. So, you know, I failed out of college, and, I think that at some point maybe I had like started going to rehab and stuff. And like really I you know, all my whole what it was like story, it's just all like demonstrations of my powerlessness, you know, like now that I didn't understand any of that, you know, when I came here, but after, you know, somebody started showing me that like I don't have a choice, you know, like I don't, like powerlessness, I do not have a choice of whether I'm going to do this stuff or not, like I'm doing it, and that was my experience for a long time, I did not, in my heart, I wanted to like go to school, and I wanted to be a good daughter, and I wanted to be a good employee and all this stuff, but I couldn't, I was powerless, you know, and not that's not an excuse, you know, like I still have to clean all that stuff up for living like an asshole for a long time, but anyway, that's really what this my experience is about, my powerlessness. So maybe I had started like going to a couple rehabs or something, and they would talk about like get a sponsor and go to AA and, you know, all that stuff. But I just, like, I would go in there and I would, like, tell them, yes, like, I'm going to do this stuff when I get out of here. And, like, yeah, I'll take your suggestions and, like, I'll go to, you know, do all the groups and all that stuff. And then as soon as I would get out, like, I would be doing what I wanted to do. Or sometimes, like, the obsession in there would be so bad that I would have to leave. Like, I'd find myself out in AMA because, like, I had to go. So I ended up, like, getting in a little bit of legal trouble, and, you know, my poor mom, man, like, she comes and, like, bails me out of jail, you know, she brings all this bail money, she bails me out of jail, and, you know, it's like, I wrote her, like, a letter for Mother's Day, like, a couple years ago, and, like, I said in there, like, you never gave up on me, man. Like, you never gave up on me. She didn't. And, like, whether that's codependent or not, you know, like, it talks in the big book about, like, many of us would be dead if it hadn't been for our understanding wives and mothers and stuff. And, like, she didn't. She was always there. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would be here, like, if she, you know, I don't know. So anyway, she bailed me out of jail. I go in front of this judge, and the judge says to me, okay, so because you've never been in any legal trouble before, we're going to go easy here. We're going to do 6 months of probation, and you go to an IOP thing, and then we're just going to forget that all this ever happened. And because I'm powerless, like I could not show up for the probation officer appointment. And I did not show up for the, I didn't show up for any of it, you know? And I did not meet his request. So I go back in front of him, and like, he's furious. And he said, okay, so now you're gonna have 3 years of probation and you're gonna do a long-term treatment center. And so that was my, you know, sentence, whatever. So like I said, you know, my parents really loved me and they would have done anything for me to like be okay. So they send me to this top in the country treatment center in South Florida. I had kind of like my first experience with like untreated alcoholism. I was like forced into this state of abstinence, this state of sobriety for like 11 months. I was down there, and I knew that I couldn't, you know, I knew that I was going to go to jail if I did anything. So, I was able to put together 11 months with, like, the obsession on me. I would fantasize and daydream about getting the heck out of there so I could go do what I wanted to do, you know? And definitely in the bedevilment, you know, I can remember just having these, like, I was positive that I was, like, highly, you know, suffering from, like, depression and stuff. I would start crying for no reason, and just, it was not, like, a real good time, you know. A lot of my story is kind of going back and forth, Florida, Pennsylvania. I go back up to Pennsylvania to finish out this probation that I have to do. And, like, after, like, maybe 2 weeks of me being up here, like, I picked up. And I can remember picking up and being, like, you know, it was, like, such relief. Like, I was thinking about it that whole time, and finally I picked back up, and it was, like, that sense of ease and comfort, you know? And I think that the Big Book really is, like, it's like, is this your experience? And, like, all this stuff that is in there is my experience, you know? So, I pick back up with the delusion, right, of, like, I'm going to do this a couple times, and then I'm going to stop. And so that was not the case. So I pursued that delusion for, like, years, you know? I think that I was 22 at the time, I got sober when I was 26. And it was really, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about this the other day, and, like, for those 4 years or whatever, it really, I mean, most of the time I was just, you know, I was like this, asleep, you know, asleep, basically. But it's just so tired for a long time. My parents can see that things are not going well with me being up here, so they say, okay, you got to get back down to Florida where you were at least, you know, not doing all this stuff. So I go back down to Florida, and, like, I bring this madness with me. I bring, like, this sickness with me down there. So I'm down there, and it was just, like, a horror show, you know. It's like the Big Book talks about, like, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, and, like, when I read that, like, I know what that means, you know. I ended up going from, like, you know, staying at people's apartments and, like, kind of having roommate situations to sleeping on couches to sleeping in hotel rooms to, ultimately I'm in my car in this gas station parking lot, where I go in and, like, you know, use their bathroom and wash my face and stuff. It just wasn't, in that time period, I started experiencing this thing where, like, I would wake up and I would say, like, I am not going to do this stuff today. Like, I am not going to do it today, you know? And then, you know, by the afternoon, maybe I was starting to think, okay, I can get a little bit of money. Maybe it can be different tonight. Like, I really believed that this time it could be different, you know, that this time it wasn't going to go like all the other times, and I could manage and control it and stuff. I ended up, so I get to that point where I got really no way, I got no options, you know. I don't have anywhere to live, I don't have any money, you know, I can't show up to any sort of job in, like, an appropriate manner. And I talked to my mom, and she was like, you need to come back home, like, you need to come back here. So I go back up here, and I had started going to this, like, IOP thing. It was just, like, during the day, and, like, every day I would go in there and be like, I messed up again last night, and, like, you know, I kept going for some reason. And it's funny, like, when I was going through this stuff, you know, starting to go to the IOP and start, this is kind of like, so what I was like, and this is kind of like what happened. like, I couldn't see it when I was in it, but, like, I can see that I didn't have anything to do with this stuff. Like, I can see the hand of God in it. Like, I could have never lined up all these series of events to happen. I couldn't have on my own. So anyway, I start going to this IOP thing, and they put me on this list to go to a halfway house, and I, you know, they told me that I was available if I wanted to go to this halfway house. It was available, and I'm like, I'm gonna respectfully decline that offer, thank you, because I still wanted to try to do this my way. Like, I still wanted to try to figure out. I fancy myself as a pretty intelligent girl, and I thought that there was some way that I could intellectually figure out how to do this successfully, how to do things successfully and keep the damage down and stuff. And So I didn't have a car or something. My mom was taking me the one morning to this IOP thing, and I'm getting out of the car to go in, and, like, I just turned and looked at her, and, like, she was crying, and, like, her face was, like, there was so much pain in her face, and she was saying, like, please go to this halfway house. Like, please go. And, like, just for a moment, I saw that, like, what I was doing was, like, killing her. Like, it was destroying everybody around me that ever loved me was being affected as a result of my actions. Because I always used to say, like, it was just like this moment of clarity, you know? Like, I saw, I could see that she was this broken, you know, shell of a person because of what I was doing. And I always, you know, I always used to say to people, like, you think I like being this way? Like, look at what I'm doing to myself. You think I like being this way? And little did I know, like, I'm hurting everybody around too. So I said, like, fine, I'll go there for you for 6 months, right? And that was, like, my terms, that I would go there for 6 months. And and so I went, and, like, that was not what happened. Like, that was not what happened, you know? I get to this place, and of course, you know, I'm freaked out, and I don't want to be there and stuff. And this is even, I mean, this is after a bunch of rehabs and a bunch of halfway houses in Florida and stuff. And I still, I mean, it's frightening, kind of being, you know, here, go live with a bunch of strangers, and, you know. So, you know, I get there, and I start going to meetings and stuff, and I actually ended up coming here to this meeting. And I was going to a lot of other meetings and, like, some other, you know, I was going to some other meetings and stuff. And, like, there was something different about the people that I met, these women that I met here. Like, they looked different. Like, they were, like, happy and sober. And, like, I didn't think the two could be at the same time. I didn't think it could be possible. And they had, like, this light in their eyes, you know? And so I asked one of them to be my sponsor, and she said yes. It's funny, it's like, anytime I'm asking someone to be my sponsor, I feel like I'm, like, asking for their hand in marriage or something. It's like, but I asked her to be my sponsor, and she like, rocketed me through the steps, you know? She laid her life aside and took me through the steps. And it's fun, you know, the principles that are, like, contained within the steps and doing this stuff are so powerful, I think. You know, we were two completely different people, her and I, you know? Like, she was, like, from Easton, she was kind of like ghetto, you know? She used to say to me, like, Lauren, this recovery shit ain't for no chumps. And, you know, it was just, but the principles that were in between us, like, that one, the magic of one alcoholic sharing with another, like, that was there, you know? That was there. And it worked. Like, it worked. And it's funny, I look back at my old inventories that I did with her, and they were, like, really pitiful, you know? They were, like, really very surfacey and, like, not extensive at all. But it worked, you know? So I don't know, you know, I've had since that first time, I've gone through this stuff other times and I've had other experiences and stuff. But, and so now, you know, at this point, I have a lot of, like, intellectual knowledge about, like, you know, the steps and what this stuff all means and what step one means and what it means to be powerless and unmanageable and all that stuff. I didn't get any of that when I was first going through the steps. I didn't understand any of that. The only thing that I really got was, like, I was probably going to die if I didn't do something different. Like, I believed that I was probably going to die if I didn't try this, you know? And I saw these women, and I believed that there was something to what they had. Like, I saw, like, it worked for them, you know? And so, you know, definitely since then, a lot of, you know, a lot of cool experiences with step one, and, you know, I think that, I don't know, I think that it's been my experience that I, you know, I continue to do this stuff, continue to go through these processes and stuff, because I believe in the first step, you know, I believe that I'm an alcoholic, I believe that I cannot do this, that I cannot drink successfully, that I have the mental obsession, the mind that will bring me back to it over and over, and the body that can't handle it, and then the spiritual stuff, you know. So, and then, you know, steps like two and three, I can remember this God stuff. Like, I did not want to come to AA and be like one of those God guys, you know? Like, it sounded, because I really felt like it was like this thing where it's like, okay, leave your fun at the door, like your life is over, you know, and now you're going to be, time to be a good girl, and, you know, all this stuff. And I can remember telling, it seems like a real unattainable thing for me to believe in, like, a higher power, because I was raised, my parents don't believe, you know, they don't believe in God or anything. I was never raised with any religion or any of that, and it just seemed very unattainable to me. And I can remember talking to my sponsor and telling her, like, I feel like believing in God is like believing in unicorns or mermaids, you know? Like, it would be really cool if something like that existed, but it's not possible, you know? I really felt that way, and that's not my experience today. You know, it's like, unbeknownst to me, I go through these steps, and I develop this thing with this power, you know, that's the way that I get to the power. That's the way that I get to the power, and that's what happens. So, you know, so that was kind of like, you know, step two. So it's funny, you know, I am continually brought back to, like, the third step, you know, because I continually try to, like, run things and think that it really would be so much better if you just did it the way that I think you should do it, you know? It's like, it's like I can see it very clearly. You know, I get to sort of, okay, so if I stop trying to manage things, if I stop trying to run the show, and I can remember reading that part about the actor that wants to run the whole show, and, like, I could relate to that. Like, I could relate to, like, if you would just do it this way, if my parents would just act this way, if I could just get the right car and the right job and the right guy to love me and, you know, all this stuff, then I could rest satisfaction and happiness out of this world, you know, then I would be okay. But, and even, like, stuff, you know, where I work, I was experiencing this thing, like, maybe 6 months ago or something, where, like, I was just getting, like, really annoyed, like, with all the clients that were coming in and with my coworkers, and, like, no one really could seem to do it right. And it was this really cool experience that brought me back to, like, I'm not in charge here. Like, my job is not to work at the salon. Like, my job is to be helpful to God's kids, you know, that's my job. It's not to work there, it's not about how much money I make, it's not about how these people are acting or whatever, you know, and so that, with, like, working with some prayer stuff with that, it's like, that whole attitude, that whole perception I had about work being really frustrating or whatever, like, totally shifted, It really did. Not that it's not, you know, I mean, of course there's stuff that comes up or resentments or, you know, annoyances or whatever, but it's not like it was. It's not like it was when I was going through that thing. So when I first started working with his sponsor, she had me write out. She, like, welcomed me into her home. You know, like, she welcomed me into her home, and I just stayed at her house for a couple days. And we wrote my inventory. We wrote my resentment and fear and conduct inventory. And, like, I really believed that, like, these people were doing this stuff to me. Like, the people that I was annoyed at, like, they were really wrong, you know? Like, I really believed that. And then she started saying to me, like, these people that were on my resentment inventory, we get over to the fourth column, and she starts saying to me, well, what kind of daughter were you? And, like, what kind of employee were you? And what kind of sister were you? And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I was, you know, awful to all of these people that I was so annoyed at, you know? And it just sort of, like, melted all of that stuff away, you know? And I drove home from her house feeling like the tires were not touching the ground in my car. I mean, I don't think that you can really express. I don't think that my words are sufficient to really describe experiences like that, you know? But I knew, like, it was like those fifth-step promises in the book. Like, after that, I knew that there was something to this stuff. Like, I knew, because I always thought that it was, like, this game of, like, chance or luck, or, like, how long can I hold on to until it gets all messed up again, you know? Like, how long can I hold on for? And it's, like, I can remember asking my sponsor, like, if I stay doing this stuff, could I actually, like, stay sober for a long time? Like, could I actually, like, do this for, like, a long time? And she took me to, like, how it works, and she said, rarely have we seen a person fail that has thoroughly followed our path. And it was, like, so that it was so profound to me. So, you know, and I've done a lot of other stuff since then with, like, fear inventories and the conduct inventories and stuff. And you know, had, like, a lot of cool experiences with that. But so I don't know, you know, with, like, 6 and 7, I think that it's like, okay, so I don't remove the defects. God removes the defects. I help his kids. I show up, I help his kids, and then this stuff just kind of gets removed, like, when he sees fit. However, I went through, you know, I went through this stuff a while ago with this woman, and she also said to me, and I think that I do believe this, you know, she said, like, but you gotta be willing with the character defects, you gotta be willing to be a little bit uncomfortable sometimes. Like, you gotta be willing to, instead of running to food or to sex or to gambling, you know, whatever, instead of running to that stuff, are you willing to just be a little bit uncomfortable, maybe, you know? And I think that, you know, that definitely made sense to me. So I start making this list of people that I, you know, that I owe amends to. And, like, I've had a lot of really cool experiences with amends. I've had a lot of, like, really beautiful experiences. I've had not, you know, some not so much. Some people have said, you know, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you, you know. And I think it really, you know, I did a lot of damage to some of these people. I understand why, it, you know, it would be too painful for them, you know. But I think that the amends is more about being willing to do it, you know, being willing to do it than actually physically doing it. So, like, the first amends that I make is to my mom, because, like, I know she's going to say, like, she won't make too hard of terms with me, you know, like, she'll just say, like, oh, I'm so glad that you're okay, or, you know, whatever. And, so, you know, I go and make this amends to my mom, and, you know, talk to her about, like, there would be a lot of times where for a couple weeks or months she wouldn't hear from me, and, like, she'd be calling the police department in Florida seeing if, like, I was dead, you know, if they found me dead or whatever, you know? So it's, like, just, I robbed her of all, you know, that peace and Santa, any sort of shreds of peace or, you know, being okay. And also, I mean, you know, a lot of my teenage years and young adulthood was riddled with lies, you know, being dishonest, saying I need money. You know, there was one time I called up my parents and I said that I needed money for a new car battery, and then I called my grandma and told her that I needed money for a new car battery, and like thinking that they weren't going to talk to each other. So that didn't go over real well. So all this stuff, the way we live when we're out there, you know, I go there, I make amends with my mom, and you know, I say, like, what can I do to make this right, you know? And basically she said, like, the way that she responded, she said, like, I always knew you were in there. Like, I was just waiting for you to come back. Like, I was just waiting for you to come back. That's what she said. And she said, what you can do is stay doing what you're doing. I get a lot of people say that. Just stay sober. Just stay doing what you're doing. But she also said, like, I want you to help other people that are like you, because, like, you don't know when you help somebody else that's like you, the healing that can come with everyone that's involved, you know? Like, from her perspective, it was, like, this really helpful thing to help other people that are like me, because, you know, maybe other moms and dads or whatever, they could get better, too, you know? And so since then, you know, I've definitely, to the best of my ability, attempted to do that. So, you know, when I was going to backtrack for a second here, when I was living in Florida, I couldn't find a job, probably because I was, like, vastly unemployable. I was not really employable. I couldn't find a job. But so my grandmother said, why don't you go back to cosmetology school, and I'll pay for it. While you're down there, you can't find a job, I'll pay for you to go to cosmetology school, and you can go back to school and get your license when you're down there. So I said, okay, and I tell her that it's like, I don't know, $1,000 or $1,500 more than it actually is every month, the school. So she's putting in, instead of maybe putting in $500 to my account every month, she's putting in triple that or whatever. And, like, the money that she's putting in is gone in a couple days. You know, it's gone. So I have to go to her and make amends and tell her about this stuff, that all this money that she was giving me to go to school was not going to school. And so I go to her and I tell her, and she was like, I know. You know, that's what she said, I know. It's like, I think that I'm, like, really kind of doing a good job at, like, screwing people. And, you know, it's often, they know. So, you know, that was, and listen, this is the thing, I do believe in that, like, the living amends stuff is pretty important, you know, you know, as a rule, like, I don't borrow money from my parents anymore. Like, I ask them how they're doing. Like, I try to be helpful at the you know, I do stuff like that with my grandma. I go out to lunch with her every single week, or I go over to her house, and, like, sometimes I don't feel like doing it, but, like, I do it anyway, you know, to just, like, show up. So, you know, those are cool moments. I'm making a lot of amends in Florida currently. I'm doing it, like, via letter and phone call and stuff, because I don't have the ability to get down there. I am by no means current on my amends. I mean, I still have a lot of amends to do. I was looking over some stuff a couple weeks ago on my amends sheet, and I was looking at it, and I'm like, I'm all done my amends. Like, I'm all current on my amends. And then I flip the page, and there's, like, 30 names on there. So 30 names, you know, I got to make amends too. So I'm not current, you know, but I keep doing them. I keep doing them. So, you know, I went to New York to do an amends. I went to Massachusetts, did a couple of amends up there. I caused a lot of damage up there. I was living with my aunt and uncle for a while, and it somehow ended with, like, all of my belongings out on their front lawn with the police there, you know, like, that, you know, sort of how I was, you know, how I ended up leaving there. And so, you know, I went and made amends to them and told them about, you know, all this stuff. And they thought I was a woman. And, you know, they talked to me for like 3 hours. For 3 hours, they told me about what I did to them, you know. And my uncle said to me, you know, my aunt keeps getting cancer. She has cancer coming back like every 5 years. And my uncle said, you know, your aunt's dying of cancer and you're out there doing that stuff. You know, you're out there living like that. But, like, they needed to say that stuff, you know. And we've had, like, it's been a much better relationship since I made that amends. Like, there really is, like, this healing in this amends stuff. Like, there is power to it. Like, my family was, like, so broken and, like, so messed up from all this stuff. And, like, everything's okay now. Like, everything really is okay. So, it's like, see, step 10 and 11, I didn't do step 10 and 11 for like a year in sobriety. And I was insane. Like, I was hanging within threads of my sobriety. I was living grimy, like living like I was when I was out there, just not getting high or drinking. Totally bedeviled, you know. It was, I don't know. So, you know, I ended up, you know, very close to picking up, and I flew into this meeting, and I got with a sponsor and we got real serious about doing 10 and 11 and 12. And, you know, I was taught to, you know, look for these certain things, look for resentment, selfishness, and dishonesty, and fear, and when these crop up, I do four things, you know, and I forget sometimes certain parts of, like, what to do, you know. Sometimes I'm no good at calling somebody and talking about whatever the disturbance is, but, like, I forget to ask God to remove it sometimes, you know. I forget to turn my thoughts to somebody that I can help, but, you know, do what I can. I have, you know, sometimes for a while I have like a little sticky note on my mirror that said, like, just ask. It just said ASK, ask. So I remember to ask God to remove it, you know. And I believe for me, like, the 10th step talks about watching, being a watcher, watch for resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, fear. I don't know if I can be the watcher unless I am working with meditation. Like, unless, like, how can I see this stuff coming in if I'm not working with meditation? You know, it's just, that's my experience. So, you know, with step 11, I've gotten, like, pretty serious about working with prayer and meditation every day. And it's not like I'm doing it for hours a day, like, you know, on a mountaintop like Buddha or anything. I'm just doing, you know, I just do a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night. I do my nightly review, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, it's funny, with the 11th step, I think it's a lot more than just prayer and meditation, you know? It's like there really are specific instructions about how I go about my day, and I forget to do that stuff in there sometimes, you know? I forget to pause when I'm agitated. I forget to consider my plans for the day sometimes, you know? I forget to, you know, sometimes I don't do these things, but it really is. It's like practical stuff that I can see as being very beneficial, you know? I do that stuff, and then with, like, step 12, I'm much better at, you know, carrying this message than I am with, like, practicing the principles in all my affairs. It's tough, you know? It's tough for me to, I'm not white as snow, you know, I'm not always, you know, really loving or really kind, or, you know, I keep trying, but it's tough sometimes. But, you know, I think that with God's help, like, a lot of that stuff is possible to do, you know, pretty consistently. And, like, with sponsoring other people, you know, it's like there's a lot of stuff in the 12th step about, like, you know, this is the bright spot of our lives, and, like, you know, all this stuff, and that really is my experience. Like, it's a pretty amazing thing to see somebody in the meeting, like to see, you know, this broken girl that's got no hope, that doesn't know what to do, and like I can go to her and say, like, I was like that, and like I found this other way. If you want it, I can show it to you. You know, I mean, that's a really amazing thing. I've had a lot of really beautiful experiences working with people. I've worked with a lot of people. I've never seen them again. They leave, you know, and I never see them again. But I've had, you know, I've developed some very close friendships and very, you know, bonds with these people. And so, you know, it's really been a beautiful thing. And I don't know, just like in the last couple of minutes, I'll talk about, you know, what my life is like today. And, you know, as a result of being in this program, you know, I have had the opportunity to, you know, to be a good employee and to be a good daughter. And I've also, like, met a lot of really good people in AA, you know. Like, I have, like, these relationships with people, these bonds with people that I would never have had the opportunity to have if I hadn't been, you know, doing this deal. People that don't want anything from me, like, we just love each other, and we want to be helpful to each other and stuff. It's not like when I was out there, it's like, what can I take from you, or what can, you know, it's not like that. So that's really cool. And also, you know, I heard this speaker say years ago, he said, like, if you stay doing this stuff, and you stay, you know, applying these principles and stuff, like, your dreams can come true. And, like, that's been my experience, you know? Like, I was able to show up and, like, go back to school and, you know, get a little associate's degree, and now I'm going to school for, like, my bachelor's degree, and this stuff is really in my heart, you know? Like, this stuff that I really want to do, it's possible. I had a lot of dreams about doing stuff when I was out there, but it was never gonna really happen, you know? And like, it is actually happening. And it's funny, you know, it's like I'm going to school at the same school that I failed out of years ago, and it's like this totally different experience, you know? I had all this fear about going there, you know, this time, all this fear about like what you guys are gonna think, you know, what people are gonna think of me, and I'm gonna be different, and not gonna, and my judgments and perceptions on all that stuff are like 99% of the time they are wrong. Like, I am wrong about what my head tells me, you know, that, you know, it's always not good stuff, you know. But my experience demonstrates otherwise. So, like, I've had this really cool semester at school, you know, I am capable. I didn't think that maybe I was capable of doing this stuff, but I am. And, you know, it's just really neat to be able to show up and like have all these opportunities and stuff, and to have like this really sort of useful, like I have a purpose today. Like, I have a purpose today, you know? And I didn't for a long time. I had a purpose, but it wasn't good. But I have a purpose today, you know? And it's a really, like, beautiful, amazing thing. So I think that's all I got. Thank you.